All right, let's get real, and you know what I'm talking about. Before we before we go anywhere, let's just remember. You know, let's all get on the same page and remember what we're talking about.
In these small towns that we get to visit, and in these wonderful little pockets of what I call real America.
Real Virginia, I take to be the this part of the state that is more southern in nature.
So welcome. Let's give a welcome to Makaka here. Welcome to America and the real world of Virginia.
The real Virginia, the real America. We are so fortunate that the real scholar on this very topic lives right here in Charlottesville. Anthropologist Richard Handler, an associate dean at the University of Virginia, joins me live in studio. And Richard, I mean, this is right up your alley. I mean, if I remember correctly, you wrote your dissertation on this very idea of a part of a society saying we're real and you're not.
Yeah, a long time ago in the 70s and 80s, I studied the Quebec independence movement, which is a nationalist movement, and there are nationalist movements all over the world. And in nationalist movements, people, politicians, ideologues, writers, historians, anthropologists, try to make a claim about what is real, what is the real identity of the country, or what is the real culture of the country. And one of the things you learn when you look at these movements over time and in different places is that no one ever agrees. So everyone thinks that you ought to be able to make a claim that there is a real America or there is a real Quebec, but no two political parties or even two ideologues in the same party agree on what exactly that real identity is.
So even the folks in those Palin crowds would disagree about what the real America
is.
I'm
sure if you asked them the right question, you know, if you got down into enough detail, they would. And the obvious, from our perspective as students of nationalisms or regionalisms, it's kind of obvious when a politician like Sarah Palin or any other politician talks about the real America, one's response is, but wait a second, why isn't some other part of the country just as real, which is the kind of feedback or pushback we've been having in the last few days.
Yeah, we've been seeing that quite a lot, and she's getting a lot of blowback from those comments, especially from naturally folks in Washington, D.C. and New York who were bombed on 9/11.
Right.
Major metro city areas, lots of people, not really the real America she's referring to, certainly.
Yeah.
And yet there's people who died there and were attacked by terrorists.
Well, that's a fascinating the question of sort of the meaning of New York City for the United States, or the meaning of Hollywood for that matter, is fascinating. And if we think of politics in this country in the last 30 years, probably longer, a constant reference usually on the part of Republicans, but not exclusively on the part of Republicans, to the heartland, for example. And I always would say, and where is the heartland? Well, presumably it's Iowa or Kansas. One of those rectangular states. And I would always say to myself, well, they have, the population isn't very, it's not a very great percentage of the population. Why is that more real than the 8 million people in New York City, or however many million people are in that metro area? And then there was the terrible tragedy of 9/11, but it did kind of allow people to raise a certain challenge to the question of the heartland, right? And for a while, a very short while there, people said, well, New York City is America. We are New York City.
We're all New Yorkers.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Giuliani is America's governor.
Right.
It's as if we were all part of New York. Yeah
and that
That's gone.
That dissipated, I guess, for complicated reasons. Didn't last very long. But so what's fascinating about the current moment, and of course, this election is beyond belief as far as fascination goes, right? Because on the one hand, you have a kind of economic crisis like nothing any of us has ever experienced. And on the other hand, you have something I never thought I'd see in my lifetime, and I should tell the listeners I'm 58 years old. I never thought I would see an African-American president or somebody who's classified as African-American be elected to the presidency, and that's a real possibility now. So this is an amazing election. And one of the smaller but still nonetheless amazing aspects of it is the fact that now people are willing to challenge this notion of a real America. So when Sarah Palin talks to a small town audience and says, you are the real America, commentators won't stand for it. She's challenged.
And that is a new thing.
It is new.
In the past, they've sort of bought it and said, well, she's right. That is the real America.
Yeah, and if we think about one of the clips you just played, which was the George Allen Makaka thing, you're right. He made that exact claim that the young man to whom he referred as Makaka was not part of the real Virginia and welcome to the real Virginia. But that, I don't think, is what lost him the election. I think what lost him the election was using the racial term.
Yeah, it's interesting. They came almost in the same sentence.
Yeah.
And yet what everyone was upset about was Makaka and not right. that he was referring to the real Virginia.
That's right. And so between – and it's kind of remarkable that Allen lost that election, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And even that remark
– And barely lost it. It was close.
Right. And I wouldn't necessarily have predicted that that remark would have made the difference, but it did, or we think it did in hindsight. So now it's whatever it is 2 years later, and Sarah Palin's claims about the real America, all of a sudden we're allowed to challenge this. And I used to wonder 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 15 years ago, why did anybody on the progressive spectrum or a Democrat or even people who don't agree with this, why didn't anybody challenge people on this kind of rhetoric? Every time a politician talked about the heartland or the real America, why didn't people say, wait a second, there are many real Americans, and who gives you the right to define one town or one region as real and some other town or region as less real?
And what's so dangerous, by implication, there is less real, there's fake parts, there's less patriotic parts, there's the anti-American parts of America.
Yeah, and we
by implication, it's the cities and the Northeast and California.
Right, and there are a lot of, your mention of the word patriotism or patriotic, it reminds us there are a lot of strands that are interwoven here. So one is the patriotism traitor kind of dichotomy or spectrum. Another is racial. So the heartland is where people who aren't colored live.
Right, right.
Cities are where people who are colored live, and therefore these are less American than white areas. And another theme, which is much older than American nationalism, but which you just mentioned, is fear of cities. So the nostalgia that says the small town, the countryside, the pre-industrial landscape is somehow authentic, and what came after is not authentic, real. And that actually, I think, is a kind of transformation of the Garden of Eden myth or story.
Yeah,
or,
yeah. And you certainly see that throughout the writings of Thomas Jefferson.
Yeah,
I mean, he was
yeah.
very anti-city mm-hmm. and very anti-England for that reason. Mm-hmm. That's where mm-hmm. the cities are.
Yeah.
We're not going to have that here. We're going to be a nation of farmers and
right.
farm and the heartland writ large was mm-hmm. his vision for America.
Yeah, and it's so fascinating that people... Let's take Hollywood as an example, which can be portrayed as a den of iniquity and therefore less American and less real and less worthy. On the other hand, Americans and people all over the world are incredibly drawn to the products of Hollywood. So they kind of, they contradict themselves.
Yeah,
but most of us do in many things that we yeah. say and think.
We're talking with anthropologist Richard Handler, an associate dean at the University of Virginia. We're honored to have him here in the studio. The phone lines are open at 977-1070. Rick is on the line. Oh, we lost Rick. Sorry about that. Rick, give us a call back. Richard, is this a uniquely conservative tactic, or do you see liberals in different societies using this idea of the real?
I don't think it's uniquely conservative. I think wherever you have a politics that wants to define an identity, you have to have leaders or ideologues stating their vision of what that identity is, and that almost inevitably will exclude other people who are also members of the polity. It so happens in the United States, it seems to me, and I could be wrong about this, but it seems to me that this is more a conservative, patriotic, kind of Republican rhetoric than one used by Democrats. But I'm sure that our listeners could find lots of examples of Democrats using this kind of rhetoric
in American
as well.
History.
Probably in the present.
Yeah. I don't want to be hyperbolic, but the real danger here is that you start to demonize your neighbor. And that, to me, is the frightening thing. And if you look at, you know, Germany in the 1930s is an example, and I am not saying that Sarah Palin's acting like Hitler. I'm not saying that. We're talking on an academic level here. But that is the real danger, is it not, of this kind of rhetoric?
Demonize and exclude. And you know, I guess a real test case for if you want to push yourself in trying to think about these issues, think about how you yourself or how we think about immigration and immigrants. On the one hand, we could say in the grand sweep of American history, there's nothing more American than immigration. On the other hand, many people today are deeply frightened by or troubled by so-called illegals or a flood of new immigrants, however people imagine it.
Which is as American as apple pie.
Exactly. I mean, but if
no Irish need apply, right?
Right. But if you or I want to make a claim that the South American immigrant living next door or working in a business that we patronize, if we were to make the claim that that person is as American as we are or the founders of UVA, many people would not be able to respond to that, or it wouldn't make sense to them. And you know, if you listen to the debate on immigration, I think lots of Americans are willing to recognize or admit or welcome people who come here illegally or what's imagined to be legally. They have a harder and harder time tolerating people they imagine to be here illegally. Yet you could still ask the question: America apparently needs these people because we hire hundreds of thousands of illegal immigrants. So that phenomenon is an authentic and real part of contemporary America, and to pretend that it isn't is a kind of funny requires you to not see some things that you might want to pay attention to.
And we're talking with anthropologist Richard Handler of the University of Virginia, and that really sort of speaks to that American dichotomy, which is really at the heart of the American experience. It always has been, these dichotomies and these oppositions that we have always debated and struggled with.
Yeah, so I'm sure that no political party has the monopoly on this rhetoric. Although, I don't know, we've zeroed in on Palin's comments, haven't we? Have you heard other politicians making these claims in this election?
Sure, yeah. John McCain's brother said that the referenced Northern Virginia as not being real. Mm-hmm. We heard from Nancy Pfotenhauer in that last clip,
right,
who's an advisor to John McCain, and she lives in Oakton, Virginia, and refers to where she lives as not real. And she says it's not real until you get to the southern part of Virginia, the rural, southern, and by implication, white part of Virginia, that's real. Mm-hmm. And the northern people of more color and more crowded, that's less real.
Right. And of course, we who live in Charlottesville have always been told that Charlottesville is not the real Virginia, right?
Yeah, yeah. We're this little strange little island of unreal.
The PRC, as we used to be called.
The People's Republic of Charlottesville. Charlottesville. Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating stuff. How should people react to it, though, as we hear it? Because if there's anything that we could probably bank on, it's been the last time we'll hear it in a political campaign.
I think it's very healthy for people to say, wait a minute, who has the right to, why does this person have the right to proclaim one area more real than another? People should ask themselves, what does it mean to say that someone who lives in a city or lives here or there isn't a real American? Why do you even want to make that claim?
Yeah.
You can say, I disagree with your politics. I think your politics are bad for the country. But why make a political argument based on by claiming that your opponent is less real, less authentic, less patriotic, less committed to the country than you are.
Yeah.
And we could say that Obama has been, and again, it's interesting that Obama has been able to make these claims where, let's say, a John Kerry couldn't make the claim successfully despite, the guy had a war service record.
Yeah.
And yet he was perceived as not being patriotic, whereas Obama has been able to present himself, first of all, as quintessentially American in the sense of the rags to riches story or the immigration story. He's been able to harness those stories for his own.
That Lincoln-esque, from a log cabin kind of life.
That's right. And, and an immigrant, at least his father.
Yeah.
And Obama has also sort of consistently presented himself as a uniter, not a divider. And why it's been possible for him to do that in 2008, whereas it wasn't possible for opponents of the current administration to do that in 2006 or 2004. I don't quite understand what's changed everything.
Yeah. Well, it may be the economic crisis.
It may be.
As the McCain campaign top advisor admitted on October 5th, if we keep talking about the economic crisis, we will lose.
Right.
So they're talking about everything, but it's fascinating stuff.
Yeah, and it could be this generational thing that Obama represents. We certainly don't want to say a post-racial America, because America is still deeply engaged by racial distinctions. But Obama's a later generation.
Yeah.
And he dealt with a somewhat different set of constraints.
And do you agree with Colin Powell that it will be, and I'm paraphrasing, but that it will be a transformational statement to ourselves and to the world if he does win?
I think it has to be seen that way. As I say, I never thought I'd see it in my lifetime.
It's bigger than big.
That's my sense of it, as a real American.
anthropologist Richard Handler, an associate dean at the University of Virginia. Richard, thank you so much. Okay. On our way out, we'll listen to Barack Obama's reaction to this very idea of the real America, the real Virginia, statements made in Richmond just yesterday.
Let me tell you something, because I know you've been hearing a lot of stuff lately. There are no real parts of the country and fake parts of the country. There are no pro-America parts of the country and anti-America parts of the country. We all love this country, no matter where we live or where we come from. Black, white, Hispanic, Asian, Native American, young, old, rich, poor, gay, straight, city dwellers, farm dwellers, it doesn't matter. We're all together. There are patriots who supported this war in Iraq. There are patriots who opposed it. There are patriots who believe in democratic policies and those who believe in Republican policies. The men and women from Virginia and all across this country who serve on our battlefields, some are Democrats, some are Republicans, some are independents. But they fought together and bled together. Some died together under the same proud flag. They have not served a red America. They haven't served a blue America. They've served the United States of America. Nobody should forget that.